This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580 and online at WILL.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Kimberly Cronick for Celeste Quinn. Today on the Afternoon Magazine, you'll meet a woman who has no problems and lives with immovable joy, and learn how you too can be free of the suffering caused by attaching to stressful thoughts that rob you of loving what's right in front of you. Today's guest is self-help facilitator Byron Katie. Her latest book, written with husband Stephen Mitchell, is A Thousand Names for Joy, Living in Harmony with the Way Things Are. The book illuminates the teachings of the ancient text, the Tao Te Ching, with simple stories that demonstrate how questioning our stressful thoughts is the end of all suffering inside ourselves and on the planet. Today we'll look at the Tao through Byron Katie's eyes and a practice she calls the work. She's also the author of Loving What Is, Four Questions That Can Change Your Life, and I Need Your Love, Is That True? How to Stop Seeking Love, Approval, and Appreciation and Start Finding Them Instead. You'll have a chance to talk to her by phone by calling, if you're in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455 or toll-free at 800-222-9455. Again, those numbers, 333-9455 or toll-free 800-222-9455. Even if you're listening online on our website, you can call that 800 number. Byron Katie's website is thework.com, and on that website includes the four questions that comprise the work, an explanation of how to do the work, downloadable worksheets for the work, a list of upcoming events, and a community section to connect like-minded people in the same geographic region. And now by telephone from California, I'd like to welcome Byron Katie to the Afternoon Magazine. Hello, Katie.
Hi, Kimberly.
It's so good to have you join us again.
Good to be back.
How are you today?
You know what? I'm very well, and seems to be a little frog in my throat, but very well, and nice to hear you, your voice again, Kimberly.
Thank you. I'm glad you're with us, frog and all.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you, is it true, as I've heard your husband, Stephen Mitchell, describe you, that you are a woman without a problem who lives with immovable joy?
Well, you know, that's how he sees me. It's how it feels to me. But I can't say I'll never have another problem. You know, how would I know the future? I'm unable to. And you know, I look around and I check my thoughts out, and I just can't see a problem, and I'm open to it.
Well, I understand that you weren't always this way. In fact, you were depressed for, I believe it was 10 years, suicidal. You lived in a halfway house for a while. You slept on the floor. You felt that low as a human being. You had an eating disorder, and you believed all the thoughts that came to your mind, such as, no one cares. I'm hopeless. I don't want to live. My children should mind me. People are unkind. How did you get from that low, low place to where you are now, where you can say, I don't have a problem. I have immovable joy.
Well, you know, it was just in a moment, in this moment of grace, everything became clear to me. It was so strange, and I can't really describe it. What I can say is that understanding came to the right person, because I am tireless in passing it on. Also, I was listening to you describing what's on my website, which is the work. It's all there, but another item I wanted to add is that there's no charge for it. You don't even have to sign up for a newsletter to get it, that it's free to everyone, and of course it's in my books. But this moment of clarity and the work was just like a given to me, and so anytime there's a problem, these questions are always meeting any problem. Let me give you an example so it's easier for your readers to understand it. For example, if I had the thought, and I invite your listeners to relate to this, you think of someone in your life, you think they don't care about you. And for example, you know, if I had the thought, he doesn't care about me, the first question of the work is it true he doesn't care about me? The second question is, can I absolutely know that it's true he doesn't care about me? The third question of the work is, how do you react when you believe that thought? What happens? And we begin to see that from that thought, that frustration happens, resentment happens, that eating order that you talked about that I held, that happened. We pick up the cigarette. We said we'd never smoke again. Maybe we snap at our children. We become depressed. And also, how that third question, how do I react when I believe the thought he doesn't care about me? Immediately, another reaction of that are the images that start to happen. The mind will give you all the proof that it's true. And then the fourth question, who would you be without that thought? And I'm not asking people to drop the thought, simply to answer the question. And anyone with an open mind can answer these four questions. So who would you be without the thought? And then we begin to notice that it's not the thought. It's not the world that is causing all of these reactions and effects in us, but our thoughts about the world. So I've come to see the world as an amazingly friendly universe. It was my thoughts about the world that were bringing on all the pain, confusion, and quite frankly, a life that no human being deserves. No one deserves to be depressed and full of self-loathing or even suffer a problem in their life without knowing about this work. And anyone can do it. It doesn't even take a teacher. So then I invite people to turn the thought around to opposites. For example, he doesn't care about me. Turned around, I don't care about him. That's an opposite. And it really can feel like a hammer that's just hit you over the head. And you begin to look at the ways that you haven't cared about him, where you haven't been kind, where you've rejected him. And we begin to notice our part. It becomes so visible in these opposites. Another opposite is he does care about me. And then to open the mind and take a deep breath and get very still and really, really notice the things that they have said and done that were kind, that were generous, and to experience that and feel that. He doesn't care about me. Another turnaround, I don't care about me. And to begin to find examples in that really soft, vulnerable place. You know, this work, you know, it is really tapping into you, into your heart, into your life, into your soul. So where is it that I don't care about myself, or for your listeners, where is it that you haven't cared about yourself, and look at the things that you have, the self-talk that you've given yourself today, the things that you have said and done that you thought to yourself, you know, why did I do that? Why did I eat that? Why did I drink that? Why didn't I get up on time? All of these, you know, the opposite of what self-love feels like. This work is powerful. My job is to invite the world to it and to wake us up to what really is causing the problem, and it's not the world. And I realize that there are listeners that absolutely cannot relate to this. It's just huge. Mm-hmm. And it's my experience and the experience of millions and millions of others. These four questions are, you know, they are really taking the planet over. They go from one of us to the next to the next.
It's like I've heard it described as the inner peace movement. And when
yeah.
we're at peace inside, we cannot do harm to anyone else because we ourselves are at a state of peace.
Yes, it's, you know, if we weren't believing our stressful thoughts, you know, no one would be able to harm another human being. We'd be sane.
Mm-hmm.
Our minds would be clear. And, you know, if we hurt another human being, we are the ones experiencing that. But even more than that, our thoughts about that human being that we haven't questioned. And that's where a lot of, you know, that's where bottom line, it's violent.
Yeah.
And it's self-violence.
So this the four questions and the turnaround, again, anytime you notice that you have a stressful feeling, if you can identify the thought that preceded the feeling, then you can work with those thoughts through these four questions in the turnaround. And then when you're done, and I've been doing this work since October of 2005 myself, so I have firsthand experience. then you're done. And oftentimes, I feel my heart is open, or something the next day I feel differently. So to make clear also to listeners, this is not, you're not judging, you're doing this with compassion, right? And some people may take them an hour to do the four questions and the turnaround. Others work in pairs with people they can hook up through the website, and you may do the work for 20 minutes one day, and the next day you may facilitate someone doing the work for 20 minutes, and it becomes a life practice.
Truly, truly. Like, once the questions, we work with them a while, we become so aware of them. For example, if the thought began, he doesn't care about me, before that thought could finish, is it true? It meets with it, and it drops. It's the strangest thing, and it is the most wonderful thing. And in that place, we see them for who they are right now, and we have all of the history. It's just that we're present, and we can, you know, we're not in a fearful place or a protective place. We're left as an intelligent listener, and my, could we use a lot more of that in the world, Kimberly? Because, you know, we're used to shooting from the hip often, and we believe our thoughts, and that's exactly what happens. And then we feel bad, and then we blame other people for it. I like to say victims are violent people, and I can say this from experience as a past victim.
Yes, and if you would, there was a story that you actually were held up at gunpoint. And applying the work, the four questions of turnaround, what went through your mind in the moment that gun was in your stomach?
Well, you know, he said he was going to kill me, and I waited and I waited because I couldn't know that it was true. I heard that he said so, but I don't even know if he believed it. How would I know another person's mind or heart? But my thought was, I hope he doesn't do this to himself. Because I know what it's like to harm another human being through my unquestioned mind, my actions. Oh my goodness, life is too short to live it out of a confused mind. But this story is in the Thousand Names for Joy that has just been published, and many other stories. You know, I had Fuchs dystrophies, and that's a very, very painful disease. It's a disease where you, all the cells in your eye, part of your eyes begin to die, and there's just nothing that they can do about it medically, and so you're left blind. And I absolutely, I have two transplants now that just happened to be available to people. I was like the 40th person to get this new operation. But while I was blind, I absolutely could not find a problem. I could not, because I imagined what life was, and just that was enough. And then now that I have these two transplants, even though I can see, I'm still imagining what life is. You know, it's all what the mind sees it as, and then that is our experience. And these four questions, you know, the work, they're anyone listening to our conversation, Kimberly, I just invite them, or any doubters, you know, anyone can do this with open mind, so I just invite everyone to thework.com or ByronKatie.com, where they can play with this themselves in the privacy of their own home. And also on YouTube, there are some marvelous, if you YouTube Byron Katie, there's some marvelous experiences of me doing the work with people on different topics that are familiar to all of us.
Yes, I've seen the videos on YouTube. They're, I would say, about 15 minutes of you doing work on people who, like, I need a partner, my mother doesn't love me, my child shouldn't have died. You're in Palestine with Israeli people and Palestinian people about the war. They're very great, the videos are. So people, listeners, could get a chance to see how the work is actually done. But what then, Katie, would you say is the difference between pain and suffering?
Well, you know, physical pain is, though it's still a projection of mind, it's the most difficult one to overcome. But suffering, we can. Everyone can overcome that. And suffering, to me, is a depression, a stressfulness, you know, a negative stressfulness, on frustration, sadness. I have, you know, I learned for myself that even sadness is a tantrum with reality. You know, it's more gentle than all the others, but on a scale from 1 to 10, it's still, you know, it's still a war. You know, it's, we don't like what happened, and we cry like children. And it's not right or wrong. It's just that when we're believing our thoughts, it's an effect. And I'm certainly not asking people not to cry. It's simply that if you do the work long enough, we come to see that compassion is way beyond tears.
Mm.
It leaves us in this state of gratitude and this availability to help, to serve other people in the face of all of it, to be clear-minded and see all of the options that are consistently in every space, and to be able, we're able to act on it because we're clear. We're not crazy anymore.
And when I hear this, you talk about pain and suffering, the example comes to my mind. Let's say somebody hits me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the pain, my face may sting, I may rub it with my hand. It's over. However, where I might suffer is I might make up a story. Well, that person hit me because I'm no good, or they don't love me, and that's where it seems the suffering comes in, is a story we attach to reality.
Exactly so. Someone slaps me across the face. Why am I smiling? It's over. That is grace. It's over. It's over. It's the past. And as you say, you know, our story about what happened, that's how the suffering begins. And the slap, you know, if we're not believing our story about it, we're present to say, you know, obviously I have, you know, you're having a problem with me. You know, let's talk. Is there something we can work through here? I obviously have missed something. And even that is, you know, an egoic thing to say, but it's a beginning. Because I say egoic because it implies that it would have something to do with me at all. But I'm always open to that because that person can show me possibly what I've missed, and I continue to grow. And as I become a kinder human being and more a nonviolent human being.
That's a very deep concept. I want to get into that a little bit more when I read one of your chapters on compassion in your new book. I just also want to remind listeners that this is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 WLR Banner. I'm Kimberly Cronick. Today's guest is self-help facilitator and author Byron Katie. Her latest book with husband Stephen Mitchell is A Thousand Names for Joy, Living in Harmony with the Way Things Are. That book illuminates some of the teachings of the Tao Te Ching through Byron Katie's eyes in a practice she calls the work, which is a method of questioning our stressful thoughts instead of attaching to them. It's just four simple questions and a turnaround. You may join the conversation by calling 333-9455 or toll-free anywhere you can hear us at 1-800-222-9455. So as I mentioned, so this book, what Stephen did is he's a renowned translator of the Tao Te Ching, which is a 2,500-year-old ancient Chinese text that has all this wisdom in it. And what he did is he read the book to you chapter and chapter, verse and verse, and then you had your thoughts, how you would apply the Tao to your own life, and that's where the book comes in. And I wanted to know, did you ever read or hear of the Tao before you met Stephen?
Actually not. His translation, the Tao Te Ching has been called the wisest book ever written, and Stephen's translation is the most highly acclaimed. It's excellent for people who want to experience the Tao. It truly is life-changing for people who haven't read it. But he did. He's my husband, for listeners who don't know that. But he said, Katie, can I just read one verse at a time, and then you respond out of the way that you have experienced life, and so we can kind of share the way you see things with people. So he would read a verse, and then I would respond, and he typed everything down, and then he took the he shortened it, and that's A Thousand Names for Joy.
Mm-hmm. So there's a couple things here. First, we're talking about the work, which is the four questions and the turnaround, which anyone can do anywhere in the world. If you have those questions, and you encourage people to write them down, because it's the mind can be slippery. So we like to put these on paper, and you can get those worksheets.
On paper,
You can get those worksheets right at thework.com. I love your saying, Katie, that all war belongs on paper, and that you want to be as mean and as angry as you were when you first felt that thought. Get that on paper and work with it, and that's your freedom is in that. Your peace is in doing that work. And then this book, A Thousand Names for Joy, seems to be what's on the other end of the work, which is this peace and joy. So we were talking a little bit. So the question is, how do you do this? How do you live the wisdom that's in the Tao? And how do you be peaceful? And how do you be kind and loving? And you're saying the work is the way.
Yeah. And, I certainly don't. It's nothing I do on purpose. It's just, no two people live in the same world. We look out and our minds, we have references for it, and we see things differently. We vote differently. We prefer different things. We all have our own inner world. And so my world and the way I see it is what's there in A Thousand Names for Joy. So it's nothing I'm doing on purpose. But what happens is I question my stressful thought, and it leaves me with a life like this, a life that is utterly, Kimberly, this is not uncommon, but I have a friend, he's an orthopedic surgeon, and he asked that, he's my doctor, and he asked that I get a bone density test, because 2.5 years ago when they tested me, I had, it was minus 2.9, I think, or 8, I think it was 9. Anyway, minus 2.8. And he asked me to be tested 2.5 years later. And now, well, for people who don't know, that is, it's osteoporosis, and very advanced for my age. I'm 64. I'll be 65 in a couple of months. And so I tested last week, and the bone density test, a very thorough one, is I have more than, I have stronger than average bone density now. And my eyes, I was blind, and now I can see, and I was totally insane 21 years ago, and clinically depressed, and the extreme opposite now. But I get to hear cases like this over and over and over and over as people begin to question their minds, because our stress levels stop, or it's much less just if you just begin it. And our bodies are there. They can more easily do what they do so well, which is heal themselves. But without the stress, the blood flows. My goodness, I have a 9-day school. I watch people come to this school, and their diabetes and blood pressure, I mean, everything becomes normal. And all we're doing is we're looking at the things, the heartbreaks in our lives, and the disappointments in our lives, and the heartaches in our lives, and the frustration in our lives. And as we do the work, it shifts. Our bodies just make these amazing shifts. The mind is all powerful. When if we have the thought, for example, he doesn't care about me, that becomes our religion. We become devoted to it. We focus on it. And then we wonder why we're lost sometimes or depressed.
I would like to invite a brave listener out there who's willing to share a stressful thought, and we could do the work right here on the air. Usually it's 15 to 20 minutes, but we could get you started, I'm sure. So let me give that number out. So if you're listening and you are particularly stressed out, if there's something that's just you're attached to and you can identify what that is, give a call, and you can do the work right now with Byron Katie. The number is 333-9455. That's 333-9455. Or toll-free 1-800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. What I want to say, it looks like we do have a caller, I think from Eureka.
Let's
go ahead. You're on the line with Byron Katie. Hello?
Okay, fine. A very interesting conversation. If I'm understanding you right, maybe this is an oversimplification. It seems like you're saying accentuate the positive, and my mind goes to a researcher at the University of Pennsylvania named Seligman, who has done a lot of work on what he calls, one of the terms he uses is learned optimism, in which he tries to get clients to see events maybe not as permanent, but just as temporary setbacks. And also Aaron T. Beck and David Burns. Have you read any of these researchers, and do you agree with their conclusions?
You know, actually, I haven't.
I think you would find Seligman very interesting. He's at the University of Pennsylvania, but very interesting. And also, well, David Burns is in the kind of genre of Aaron T. Beck of cognitive psychology, but they both seem to be saying what you're saying, that you can't argue. I think Beck says talk back to your thoughts, especially when they're negative.
Well, you know, that sounds so helpful. And some of us, hopefully, people aren't as depressed as I was and have to. I think suffering is optional. That's why I'm so passionate about getting this work out. What I found is that when I do the work, that I don't have to deal with those thoughts any longer, that actually those thoughts let go of me. I know if I'm trying to think positively, let's say I'm a wonderful person. I'm a wonderful person. And then I feel this uplifted, you know, I feel uplifted and I, you know, but eventually what I found is, let's say we get a letter in the mail we don't like, or we have we get a ticket, a parking ticket, or, you know, something happens and, or we fail a test at school or work or whatever, then those thoughts we're believing override. Mm-hmm. I'm wonderful. Mm-hmm. So what I'm inviting people to do are question all of the thoughts that override those thoughts that resonate in us as being correct. Like, you know, within us we know that we're kind, good people. And these thoughts that override that. You know, Einstein said there's only one important question to answer. Is the universe friendly? And I've come to see that not only is the universe friendly, but for 21 years, nothing has convinced me otherwise, and I'm so wide open to that. And I, you know, invite people not to believe me, but to do the work and to test it for yourself. But I think that would be the only difference. I say work with all of the negative thoughts that would override these positive thoughts that we want to believe.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. You know, how can we believe them when they're being overridden? We can't. We want to. And then when we kind of settle down, they make sense to us again. But then they're overridden again. So those are the thoughts I'm inviting the world to do the work with.
And I've heard you say, Katie, that all thoughts you welcome as visitors, because they're information about us that we can either attach to if they're if they're pleasant, or we can question them if they're stressful.
Absolutely. So this is, you know, it's so wonderful to be free-minded, where every thought is welcome. They're not thrown away like I'm too busy to deal with you. Like, you know, sometimes we're too busy to deal with our children, and I see all of our thoughts like that. They'll just scream and scream and scream until they're dealt with. And we have They've been screaming at us for generations and generations and generations, and we're like dinosaurs. We're still believing these thoughts, and I've come to see that there are no new stressful thoughts. They're all recycled. We're at war. You know, it's the mind at war with itself, and as long as it's at war with itself, it projects that as a world, and we have war in the world. It's all so simple, and I just invite everyone to, you know, all war belongs on paper. I know when you brought up the my trip to Israel, I believe you alluded to it, but, you know, this woman I work with, and that is on YouTube now, but she had been through this last war and the bombs hitting all around her. And it's marvelous watching those four questions and turnaround and how she deals with it and how the audience deals with it. There were, I think, maybe 1,000 people there, and everyone doing the work along with her was truly, truly a gift to meet this woman. And of course, I feel that way about everyone. Questions, you know, that's a courageous act.
So, yes, this work does take courage. It takes people who are wanting to seek the truth and go inside and find it in themselves. We do have another caller. We actually have a couple more. So I'd like to take a caller on line one from California. Go ahead.
Katie, hi. This is Ken in California.
Hi, Ken.
The belief that I have that seems to be plaguing me this morning is I need more money.
You need more money, Ken. Is that true? Can you absolutely know that it's true that you need more money?
I can't absolutely know that it's true.
This certainly is a popular belief in the world, in every language in the world.
It is.
One of those thoughts I was talking about, that in every language, here it is, I need more money. Or Okay, so, Ken, what happens? How do you react? What happens to your life when you believe the thought, I need more money, and you don't have it?
Well, I feel pain. I feel bitterness. I feel, and then when I do apply myself to my work in the healing professions, I just feel greedy. I feel, I lose my ability to be generous and compassionate because
we start to hold what we do have, and we can feel so small in that.
Yes.
Yeah, and also, don't we start to compare ourselves to other people?
Yes, very much so.
Yeah. So, and the images that happen when we believe that we need more money, and we're feeling in, you know, these ways that we're describing.
Right.
My goodness. So, Ken, who would you be without the thought, I need more money?
Without the thought, I need more money.
Mm-hmm. And again, on to the audience, I'm not inviting Ken to drop the thought or let go of the thought. It's simply, who would you be without the thought in your life? You know, look back at your life. What if you had never had that thought, and you're doing what you've always done, and you have what you have, and you know, don't change anything. There are no tricks here. It's who would you be, and in this moment right now, without the thought, I need more money.
I think if I didn't have that thought, I would be very, very peaceful, and I think maybe listening inside for the, I don't know, it's like I would. It's hard to say, but there would be like this a level of trust that is just much deeper than what I've imagined.
Yeah. You know, it's like.
I would.
Go ahead.
You know, I wouldn't have to worry.
Yeah. You have what you have either way, worry or not, in this moment. We all have what we have right now.
Yes, that's true.
And there are two ways to experience this moment, and look how we react when we believe that thought. And then without the thought, who am I? And it gives us an opportunity to really notice, you know, my goodness, in this moment, I really have everything I need. I was in the future, and that's that can be terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So so let's turn the thought around. I need more money. Turn it around.
I don't need more money.
So give me an example of why that's true.
Well, one example is that I do have enough in the bank to take me through the next year. So that's
wow.
one reason.
Wow, that's brilliant. So you have so much money, you have so much money, you can't even use it. You put it in the bank.
That's correct.
Yeah, so you have more than you actually need right now.
In this moment, yes.
Uh-huh, and I'm not, for you people listening, I'm not saying don't have bank accounts, and, mm-hmm. and, you know, that's not what I'm saying. It's just that is money that absolutely isn't needed right now. It's like more than I need and stored in a bank. Mm-hmm. Can you give me another example of why you don't need more money right now?
Right now? Well, I mean, I have enough food, shelter, clothing, transportation.
Where are you calling from? Your home, a car?
I'm calling from a friend's home in a very beautiful area in Santa Cruz, California.
My goodness. So are you sitting down?
I am.
Is there anything for sale where you are?
Is there anything for sale?
Uh-huh.
I don't understand the question.
Well, it's like I'm sitting in my home and no one's selling anything, so I don't need any money. There's
oh, no, right. Yeah, there's nothing for sale out here right now.
Yeah, so we're and, you know, another example is, you know, my goodness, just to sit with it and look at what we do have, you know, what money could buy, do we need more than we have in this moment now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, and we begin to see, you know, the room, the space where we are and the abundance in that. We could probably sit here for a year and see something different on wherever we are and, you know, something different every time we looked.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what a wonderful world, and it's free. And my experience is, you know, I need more money when I have it.
Mm-hmm.
Someone offered me, a wealthy person offered me some money the other day,
mm-hmm.
and I had to tell the truth that I didn't need it, but if something happened in my life
mm-hmm.
where I did need it,
mm-hmm.
I asked, could I call them? And she said yes.
Mm.
But how could I say yes if what the money's for hasn't come to me yet? So, you know, that's a wonderful experience to who would I be without the thought I need more money?
Mm-hmm.
So full of what I do have, so appreciative of what I do have that you begin to lose the reference for needing more. And mm-hmm. I've been at this for 21 years, and so far, so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then what I notice coming in the background of this is that it seems that the belief that's most painful is the incredible resentment that other people have more. That burns. And that just seems to burn inside.
I wasn't able to hear you,
I just noticed that as we did this work, I saw that there was something, I think, deeper inside, that what burns more is this incredible resentment that other people appear to have more money and more happiness.
There's well, that assumes that people with more money are happier than you are. So now we have another concept, a question. People who have more money, those people are happier in their lives than I am. And to, you know, to question that, and you might want to take a poll with some of your friends that have more money than you do. Mm-hmm. And also those people that have more money than you do, you think, oh, all that they have and more, and appear to have more money than you do and possibly have less.
Well, thank you, Ken. I hope you'll work on that thought. We only have a few minutes left. So
Thank you, Ken.
Thank you. We have a couple minutes left. Katie, I want to take one more quick call from Kentucky, line two. You're on the air with Byron Katie on Afternoon Magazine.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hi. I'm sorry the hearing just went down on my phone.
Okay. I can hear you fine.
Okay, Katie, hi. I'm calling from Ohio.
Hi.
And I am familiar with the work, and I adore it, and it's helped me tremendously, especially with raising a teenager.
I'm so happy to hear that. You know, I just finished a three-day event with children and their parents. It was so radically wonderful and amazing. These little 7-year-old, 9-year-old, 10-year-old, 11-year-old, these children didn't want it to end. And we sat in a room that looked over the ocean and the beach, and they had the time of their little lives. So I love that you have the work.
Well, I absolutely believe that, and I think that the work should be taught in schools for little children.
Yeah, I think it should be required so that they can settle down to learn the mathematics and the history and the, you know, higher education. But when they're so worried in their minds about their parents divorcing or the environment or what other kids are wearing and they don't have those shoes or whatever it is, you know, it's their minds are cluttered, and it makes it so difficult for them to learn. So I think this should be required in education, and again, children love it.
Yes. Well,
so children of all ages.
My one concern that I have that's going on in my heart is I should be closer and more intimate with other people and honest and open with them. And I feel like, oh, gosh, I'm a person that has a hard time being intimate, honest, and open with other people.
So you should be more open with other people. Is that true? Can you absolutely know that it's true, that you should be more open with people?
Not absolutely. I can't absolutely know.
So what happens? How do you react when you believe the thought, I should be more open with people?
I feel like I'm living my life wrong, even though most of my life is just fine. But I feel like I'm the isolated one when I see other people around me, like on TV or other people that seem bonded in heart with each other, and I'm not there.
Yes, you know, and also, you know, you could be walking through the marketplace with the thought, you know, believe in thought, you should be more open with people, and do a lot of false connection.
Smiling.
Going, yeah, smiling when you don't mean it, and being helpful in some way just to connect, and they don't want you to, and, you know, because it's off.
That's
so,
me.
Yeah, so, you know, doing what we think they want us, being what we think they want us to be, and saying what we think they want us to say, and we don't know what they're thinking or their heart. So the fourth question, honey, who would you be without the thought, I should be more open with people?
I think I'd be pretty comfortable with my life. I think I would be enjoying.
Yes, a natural life, just open to yourself.
I'm sorry to have to cut you off, but I hope you can sit with that thought. We only have a minute to go before the next program. So thank you for calling in from Ohio. I appreciate your call, and I'm sorry we have to say goodbye to you right now.
Thank you,
that was lovely.
That was a great place to end and sink in with that. Thank you for joining us today, Katie. I appreciate your wisdom and the work.
Oh, Kimberly, you're so welcome. I love that you have the work inside of you. Isn't it a paradigm shift?
Yes, my life is very different because of the work, and I'm happy to let other people know about it. And I've been doing the work with folks here locally, so thank you.
Wonderful.
So we have been listening to Byron Katie, self-help facilitator and author. Her latest book, written with husband Stephen Mitchell, is A Thousand Names for Joy, Living in Harmony with the Way Things Are. She has two other books. You can find out more about Byron Katie on the web at thework.com. That's thework.com. I'm Kimberly Cronick for the Afternoon Magazine.